A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
¡Mételo, Atleti! ¡Carrasco! ¡Lo ha parado! ¡Rechaza el larguero! ¡Fuera el tercer rechace! ¡Fuera el tercer rechace final! ¡Se acabó el partido! ¡Terrible la eliminación del Atlético de Madrid!
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. My name is Ruri Barlow. I'm joined by Paco Polit to break down all of the happenings in Spanish football this week and looking ahead to this weekend. But it has been a pretty traumatic week in Spanish football. Three of the four teams in Spain's Champions League have gone out for the first time since the 90s, I believe. It's since before the Champions League. And so, yeah, pretty chaotic time. Barcelona obviously lost 3-0 to Bayern. Sevilla did get a 3-0 win, which more or less secures a Europa League place, but they are out. And Atleti at the death in... yeah, incredible circumstances, really, missing a penalty. They had a golden ticket to win that match, but they couldn't do it. Paco, sort of, I know there's a lot to discuss, there's a lot to break down out of those three teams, but what's kind of been the reaction to in general to this in Spain? What's been the narrative of these teams going out?
Obviously, different levels of shock, because in some cases, you more or less could expect it. For example, in Sevilla's case, or even in Barca's, even though it was 99% secure that they were going to not be able to make it into the next round, it seems like Barca fans didn't actually notice the hard hit, till Inter won their game before Barca's won. I believe just in that moment, it really hit hard to Barca fans that they were going to be knocked out from this group stage and be more or less condemned to play on the Europa League. And you could actually see it with those scenes of Barca fans leaving Camp Nou in the 30th minute, in the first half, when they were already 2-0 down against Bayern. Overall, it was very disappointing. Sevilla more or less expected a similar outcome. And in the Atletico's case, it was quite a bit more traumatic for the way it actually happened with that 98-minute penalty. The bad stroke of bad luck, missing the pen, later hitting the post, and actually the third try, Carrasco being the one deflecting the goal. It was overall a very, very unlucky play for Atletico. And overall, if you think about the way they have played in these five games, it's deserved that the three of them are out of the next phase, of the next stage in the competition. But yeah, as I said, different levels of disappointment. In Atletico's case, much more traumatic. Barca and Sevilla more or less saw this outcome coming.
Yeah, and you talk about the trauma of this Atleti sort of going out. That draw against Bayer Leverkusen, it's obviously been quite a shock, I think, for me included. I expected them to get the result in this case. But who's kind of taking the blame for this? Because, yeah, I mean, Atleti, with their resources, they should be getting through this group. There's just no bones about it. And same analysis for Barcelona. I mean, you can look at them and say they have the resources, they have the squad to beat Inter. But I think this Atleti one, yeah, as you say, because of the manner it happened, who's been sort of, who's in the focus of the press right now at Atleti?
Well, there are a number of, possible culprits in this case. Obviously, Atleti fans at least a portion of them are going to look at Cholo Simeone, because at the end of the day, we're talking about the manager with the highest salary in the whole world, and therefore he's expected to perform his magic tricks season after season, but sometimes you actually are unable to do so. Whereas for if you look at players on the pitch, obviously Gianni Carrasco Ferreira for taking the penalty is one of the preferable targets for many fans. Also you have Felix, who actually wanted to take the pen, but he ultimately it was Carrasco the one to do it. Some of the players not being up to par with their expected performance. Overall, more or less, Atleti fans are shooting around, you know, and trying to place the blame upon somebody. But obviously, the usual suspects here are the most frequent ones: Simeone, Carrasco, and so on. And in Barca's case, well, obviously, Xavi is being under pressure at this point. Another disappointment after getting knocked out by Eintracht last season in the Europa League, this time with the huge amount of investment which took place last summer with the signings of big players, big name players. It's perceived as a big failure for Barca, who have ultimately, as we say in Spanish, hipotecar, no? They have mortgaged all of their chips on the table on trying to get far in European competitions, in the Champions League, obviously, and they have failed in this sense. So the season might end in a rough way for Barca, because only conquering La Liga and possibly having a doblete in this case with Liga and Copa del Rey would, to some sense, try to calm down the fan base, who at this point, if Xavi wasn't the name of the manager and we were talking about possibly Quique Setién, Koeman or other managers, the pressure on Xavi would be far, far greater. But, you know, he's a legend for Barca. He was one of the best players in their whole history. So that's why I think fans are trying to relieve a bit of that pressure upon the manager. But yeah, it's undoubtedly a failure for Xavi Hernández.
Yeah, I heard Thierry Henry say something similar along the lines of if Xavi wasn't the manager, people would be losing their minds at Camp Nou. And yeah, I think you're spot on with that. I think, again, for Barcelona and Xavi, the problem here is that it's sickeningly familiar. All of the errors, all of the problems that they've seen in recent seasons are the same. Even though Xavi has adjusted things, I think he's changed things, I think he's improved Barcelona overall. When it came to the big moments, they were the same, and they were the same against Bayern. I think I personally don't read too much into the Bayern result, because it's all very well playing for pride, and it's all very well sort of getting a good result for morale against the Bayern side. But once you go 1-0 down, that kind of motivation really, I think it exits you. Both Diego Simeone and Xavi described these exits or their elimination as cruel. Is that fair, or were they not good enough?
I don't think so. In Simeone's case, you could more or less understand where he's coming from with the way they were knocked out, with that, you know, as I said earlier, penalty that they didn't get in. But you had, you know, four games earlier to perform as you should perform and pick up the points that you actually needed. In Barca's case, I think that the list of excuses has been long and ineffective. Talking about that they deserve more against Bayern in the first leg game, about their double showdown against Inter, their bad luck and the refereeing. I've heard that many, many times in the past. And, you know, ultimately you've played 5 games. If you are unable to do your homework in those 5 games, you cannot blame anyone else than yourself for getting knocked out at this point in the competition. So overall, I think that Barca fans shouldn't have it with the excuses from the management of the club and from the coach. But in Atletico's case, I can sort of understand it, because it was, it was actually very cruel the way they went out of the group stage.
Moving on to La Ley del Deporte, which, as has been remarked on, was the big sort of story at the weekend. It was appearing on all of the screens on the La Liga broadcasts. So there was three points that were kind of three main key points that were voted on. The RFEF still have to give La Liga sort of notice, and La Liga still have to give approval of any changes to sort of the league and to Spanish football that they want to make. There was the TV rights, which was perhaps the biggest issue. So La Liga retained control of the TV rights, so it means they decide how it's divided, roughly, more or less. Whereas if it had been voted against, then Real Madrid and Barcelona might have negotiated their own deals, which obviously involves a less equal split. And then finally, there was the Super League clause, which was not voted through. So the 39 of the 42 clubs wanted to this clause to be sort of voted through, so that if Real Madrid and Barcelona were to join the Super League, their La Liga license would be revoked, and effectively preventing them from starting a Super League. That didn't go through, and so it does leave that open. What's kind of been the reaction and the aftermath to that in Spain? There was strike action was threatened before this kind of vote went through, but that seems to have calmed down a bit, has it?
Yeah, and I think that ultimately everyone has gotten out of this conflict more or less content and happy with the outcome, even though nobody has finished 100% happy with the way things were ultimately negotiated and signed. It comes down to a matter of money. At the end of the day, money is the motivation behind most of these changes that were being dealt with between the different parties. Obviously, you have Barca and Real Madrid trying to push forward their Super League agenda, and at the same time, the La Liga sides were trying to push forward their own motivations with the CVC agreement as the backdrop, and that was what got Javier Tebas quite nervous last week, because this Ley del Deporte, the sports law, if you want to say it in English, was trying to, in Tebas' opinion, undermine to some extent the agreement between La Liga and CVC, whereas Tebas actually wanted the Ley del Deporte to back it to some extent, at least in a legal way. So overall, it was quite a complicated issue, very tricky to get all of the parties involved happy to some extent, and ultimately the politicians were able to just navigate between this turmoil and get to a middle ground where nobody's 100% happy, but at the same time nobody's 100% defeated, if you want to call it that way.
Perfect. That's a lovely summary, Paco. I think on that note, we'll close up part one, and we'll be back in just a few moments. But bear with us, and then we'll get to a preview of an exciting weekend of La Liga action. So don't go anywhere.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. I'm Rory Barlow, joined by Paco Pollitt. Normally, we dedicate these kind of preview shows. We put them in two parts. We preview most of the weekend action in the first part, but given that there was so much going on, we decided to split it up this way. But there is one kind of standout tie, and it's in your house, so to speak. It's Valencia, Barca at Mestalla. Barcelona, as we've discussed, coming off a damaging defeat. Valencia struggling a little bit in recent weeks. How do you see this game going, Paco?
Well, I think it can go both ways. It's true that Valencia have been struggling with a string of bad results against Elche, being unable to beat Mallorca and actually getting beaten by Mallorca last week. Many injured players in many different positions. Midfield, Ilex Moriba is out. Nico González cannot play against Barça because that clause, he's on loan by Barça, and we say in Spanish, cláusula del miedo, no? The fear clause by Barça. And at the back, problems for Chomert, problems for Diakabi, who is going to be out in the next 2 months. Overall, things not looking very bright for Gennaro Gattuso, but at the same time, they have been able to really perform well at home when they have had their, a positive night ahead of them. Cavani has been scoring left and right in the last few games. So overall, I think they have their chances against Barca, who might still be in pain after that knockout from the Champions League. Obviously, they will want to try to have a good game against Valencia because it's traditionally one of the away grounds where they suffered the most. Even when Messi was still in the team, they always had rough nights at Mestalla. Lewandowski will be their main point man in front. Let's see how the Mestalla fans receive once again Ferran Torres, a former Valencia player who didn't leave in the best terms with the fans. And yeah, I think that possibly Barca are far superior in their squad and possibly in their quality of their players, but if you look at the bench, I think both Gattuso and Xavi are more or less in the same place, in the sense that they are two managers with only one plan, a plan, and whenever the game goes uphill and things go south, they struggle to change things during the game, to be able to course correct at some point in the second half, and they suffer for that. So overall, things are pretty balanced in the bench. And not that balanced, at least on paper, on top of the pitch.
Last season, this match finished 4-1 to Barcelona, and it was a bit of a, I don't want to say coming out party, but they were sort of announced themselves a little bit. I thought that was one of their better performances last season.
Yeah, turning point.
Definitely. A punto de inflexión, as the Spanish like to say. How do you think this Barcelona side's better than that side, which was Aubameyang up front and there's less resources? How do you see this Barcelona side in comparison to 6-7 months ago?
I think they are better. They have better players. But at the same time, the injuries have been hitting them hard, especially at the back. And actually, I think a great deal of responsibility of them getting knocked out in the Champions League is for the injuries they have suffered in the first couple of months at the back. Xavi had to use Gerard Piqué as a resource when he didn't actually plan on playing him he was going to bench him at least till January, and Piqué was a starter in many games because of the injuries of his teammates, and that has been the main problem for them. I think that they have a better squad, I think that they play better, and especially they have a top level number 9 in Lewandowski, and that is the main difference between this season's Barca and last season's Barca. But Even though they play better and they have a better squad, it hasn't been enough. At least they haven't been able to, clear the bar that was set for them at the beginning of the season. And that's why I think they might come to Mestalla with that kind of vengeance sensation or revenge personality
motivation in order to
turn things around, because many doubters have appeared in the last few days after their demise in the European competition.
Short and sweet. If Valencia have a chance, it will be because they do what right?
Because they manage to play differently to their only play style shown at the moment. Valencia will win the game if they are able to impose their play style, and when things go differently, if they learn to suffer at the back, if they learn how to defend, if they learn to go down to the mud, to get gritty, to drive forward and to have personality. If they are able to do that, they might get something positive out of the game.
Fascinating stuff. Two teams that do not know how to suffer. I'd say Real Sociedad and Real Betis have been fairly good at doing so far this season, but injuries starting to pile up. These two teams are the Sunday night partidazo. Betis, they've just lost Joaquin, they've lost Guido Rodriguez. We're not quite sure how serious that is, but we know that they've been missing a few players already. Real Sociedad, Ian Munoz, Mohamed Ali Cho, Oyarzabal, obviously, Sadiq, obviously, long-term injuries. Mm-hmm. How do you see this one going? Because it's two teams that are kind of being stretched squad-wise, but they're two teams that have been in good form, certainly up until last week for Real Sociedad.
Yes, especially as they, whenever fans or listeners are enjoying this chat, Real Sociedad are playing, only a couple of days earlier against the Omonia, and obviously Real Betis, they are having their own effort with that win against Ludogorets, 1-0 away from home. By the way, the goal was scored by Fekir. But yeah, I think it's obvious that when you have squads which are not really used to this kind of strain on their physique, like Betis and Real Sociedad, you get to this point. This season has an advantage, which is the World Cup break mid-November, which will allow many of those players to, recover and get in tip-top shape once again. But again, in January you will have a load of games to play, and in February, because it's Copa del Rey time and so on. Especially if both of these teams are able to move over to the next round in the Europa League, they are going to suffer. But at this point, I think most of the players are at a level where they are able to play twice per week, more or less consistently. And yeah, the injuries are piling up, especially in Real Sociedad, with the problems with their strikers, as we spoke earlier, Oyarzabal this season, and obviously their biggest signer, which was Umar Sadiq, unable to play till the last stretch of the competition. But overall, this clash of styles or clash of candidates, because both of them are, in my book, candidates for European spots, is going to be fascinating to watch. Both of them lost, by the way, last week. And that is going to prove a mighty test for especially Real Betis, who have dropped a bit. Remember, they managed to be third in the standings a couple of weeks ago, and since then only 1 point until the last six in play, and that kind of dips in form are what Pellegrini was able to avoid last season, with them getting into Europa League and winning the Copa del Rey against Valencia in the final. And surely they will want to make a statement in such a game against Real Sociedad, playing away from home at the same time. Whereas for Real Sociedad, they just have to keep the streak going. Remember that they were able to win 8 in a row till being defeated last week, which is pretty amazing to watch. And it was amazingly Valladolid the ones to end their streak of games. So overall, I think it's going to be possibly one of the highlights of the weekend.
And just before that, we see Quique Setién returning to La Liga. His first Villarreal match did not end quite so gloriously. They drew 2-2 with Hapoel Beersheba at home. I mean, it was a meaningless game, to be fair to them. They didn't need a result from that. But yeah, how do you think they'll respond to Unai Emery's exit against Athletic at San Mamés and Ernesto Valverde, who was obviously Setién's predecessor at Barcelona?
Well, I definitely love the way you just casually throw Quique Setién's name. Like, you know, La Liga Lowland listeners were thinking about Unai Emery only 7 days ago, last match day, and suddenly all exploded, everything exploded. You know, Aston Villa came around with a huge offer, and Unai Emery left Villarreal mid-season, which is pretty amazing to see in La Liga, unless, obviously, you get the sack. But, yeah, I think Villarreal moved swiftly. They, in my view, they have taken a big gamble with Quique Setién. I'm not really a fan of the way he developed his play style with Barca. Obviously, his glory days came with Las Palmas and later with Betis, but it's going to be tricky for him to try to get that kind of attractive ball-driven play style with even more ball possession that Villarreal's Unai Emery's Villarreal used to have. But at the same time, they need to get the results. And we've seen time and time again that Quique Setién isn't a man of immediate impact. You know, he needs time to adapt for his team to, you know, get going and get to the level that he demands from them. And I think it's going to be quite interesting to see, especially mid-season. He's going to have the luck of being able to work with his players for over a month, in some sort of, you know, second pre-season time during the World Cup break. But at the same time, the demands from Villarreal's board and from the fans are going to be huge for him. You know, Villarreal are expected to at least get to the semifinals in the Conference League, obviously being a championship contender, and they are expected to fight for fourth. And that kind of, you know, expectativas, as we say in Spanish, can be grueling for any manager, and also for Quique Setién. And obviously his debut in La Liga isn't against the best opposition, because Athletic Club have been great so far this season, even though they have strung a bit of, you know, a bad streak of results lately with 4 games without a win. They have played toe-to-toe against the biggest sides in the competition. They have beat Valencia on their home turf. They have played very well against Barca, even though they lost the game. I don't know. I think Valverde is doing a great job, because his team is, in my view, much weaker overall than Villarreal. The level of the players isn't even in the same tier. So I think it's going to be possibly another of the highlights. I think this weekend we have 3-4 very interesting games, and this one, especially as both of them are in the same level, you know, 18 points for Athletic, also for Villarreal, 18 apiece. So whoever wins will possibly get finally into that Champions League race, because fourth is facing fifth, as we said earlier, sixth is facing the seventh. Definitely a very interesting weekend for La Liga fans.
Yeah, it's not often that we relegate Real Madrid to kind of like fourth position in this. And they lost their unbeaten record this season. After 16 games, their 17th was a defeat to RB Leipzig in Germany. It was 3-2 in the end, yes. And I mean, again, this was kind of a meaningless game for Real Madrid. It doesn't matter too much. Thibaut Courtois was pretty angry after the match. Carlo Ancelotti, not so much. He seemed to be pretty laid back about it. I tend to think, though, that Girona at the Santiago Bernabeu is maybe the ideal fixture to respond to that with.
Well, at least I don't think that they will need to break a sweat, or at least they won't need to work that hard, because Girona have been lacking in several areas this season so far. They are capable of the best and the worst. And you only have to see, you know, their current run of games. I'm checking out their last win dates. They played very well against Almeria. They lost the game. They played very well against Osasuna. They draw the game. They draw against Cadiz. And they were beaten by Atletico Madrid. They were beaten by Real Sociedad. They were beaten by Betis. So they haven't won since. It's actually amazing, you know, their run. They beat Valladolid back in September 9th, which is about over 6 weeks without winning. Match day 5. Not the ideal situation for Girona, but obviously you already know that their aim is just to avoid the drop. At this point, with this kind of performance, they are going to be unable to do so. It's true that Elche are looking even worse. Cadiz are not looking good either, but Girona won't save themselves if they amazingly and surprisingly beat Real Madrid. They need to start picking the points against the teams who are actually in their league, you know, Getafe, Almeria, Espanyol, Celta, Cadiz, Elche. Those are the enemies, so the opposition where Girona need to win. But against Real Madrid, you know, the chances are obviously slim to none, especially if you see the form of both sides.
Yeah, Girona, they're stuck in the Michel Sanchez conundrum of being really good in the second division, playing really nice football, and getting to La Liga, continuing to play nice football, but still struggling to get results. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they maintain faith in him. There's another 6 games that we've not touched on, so I'm just going to run through them. Mallorca Espanyol on Friday night. The lunchtime kickoff on Saturday is Almeria Celta Vigo. Cadiz hosts a wounded Atletico Madrid. Sevilla Rayo Vallecano precedes the Valencia Barcelona tie at Mestalla. Sunday's action kicks off with Osasuna at home to Valladolid, who are on a good run of form. And then on Monday night, the Monday night fixture is Elche Getafe, a glamour tie, I'm sure you'll agree. Is there anything that sticks out to you here in terms of points of interest, or do you have sort of a pick of the weekend in terms of a match to give us, Paco?
If I go to the drama side of things, Elche Getafe is definitely the way to go Monday night, because there's plenty of drama to spare. And if I have to think about a fun game to watch, Mallorca Espanyol, because of the way both teams play, you know. I was very impressed by Mallorca last week against Valencia. I think Aguirre was able to turn around the game with the subs and the way he read the developing of the game in the second half. And I like Espanyol. I like Diego Martinez. I like the way they play, even though the results aren't trickling in. So yeah, Mallorca Espanyol, fun to watch. Elche Getafe, dramatic to watch.
Perfect, excellent. I think that rounds off our preview nicely, Paco, unless you've got any further thoughts.
Regarding the rest of the games, really, I'm worried about Celta. You know, the dropping form of Celta in the last month and a half has been very, very acute. And I don't think that, you know, the manager should be relaxed about the way things are going over there. They're playing against Almeria, another side who are struggling. And Celta might be, you know, very well placing themselves into big problems. Because remember, lads, that we have between the 13th and the penultimate place in the table, we have only 4 points. You have 7 teams in the fray with only 4 points between them. So, yeah, Celta, if they continue this way, they might find themselves in the relegation battle sooner than later. So I think that Chacho Coudet should be a bit worried about what is happening.
Yeah, things getting a little bit desperate for Celta, who apparently the players and Coudet asked the president if they could have Denis Suarez back, even just till January, just to help them out. So yeah, that shows you the level of desperation. Obviously, Carlos Mourinho said no. But yes, perfect. Thank you very much for your time, Paco. Thank you very much for your astute analysis, as always.
Thank you.
I will direct the listeners to our Twitter feed at La Liga Lowdown on Twitter. If you've not been there, I don't know why you haven't, but we'll be covering everything across Spanish football over the weekend there. So yeah, on that note, I will bid the listener adios and many thanks for joining us. Enjoy your Spanish football this weekend.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.